This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on this edition of the program. Brand new edition, brand new week here on American Family Radio. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green. We're your host each week. I'm with you on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Rick's with you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And Rick and I go back a decade plus. And I'm an alumni of Patriot Academy, which Rick is a founder of. That's where he and I crossed paths. And he and my dad go back further with David Barton and Wall Builders, which has aired on American Family Radio for some time now. So it's a joy to co-host the show with Rick each week. Proverbs chapter 19 is where we are this week. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. Well, there you have it. The priority of spiritual wealth over monetary wealth is abundantly clear in Scripture. And more specifically, the Scripture makes it clear that we should not let wealth, material or financial wealth, compromise our character toward God, and in this case, our integrity. It is not that money in and of itself or wealth in and of itself is sinful or evil, but the Scripture talks about the love thereof, or the love of money, can be the root of all evil, or is the root of all evil. So money is a tool that God gives us to be good stewards over and to use wisely for His purposes, because it's all under His creation and under His authority. But Proverbs 19's warning here that, you know, it's better for a man to be poor and have integrity than to the contrary be rich and lack integrity. That's Proverbs chapter 19, verse 1. Let's talk about a couple stories this segment, and then we do have guests in the second and the third. We'll have Tammy Fitzgerald on with us here in a few minutes from North Carolina Values Coalition. Obviously, NC Values has been around for a long time, and we've done a lot of great work with them. So we'll talk about some items going on in North Carolina, and then we'll talk to Louisiana Rep. Laurie Slagle in the last segment on some of the age verification legislation that the representative has helped pass in Louisiana. The article that I want to talk about this segment. We'll talk about a couple of stories. But the first one is from American – both of these are from American Family News. Chris put this one out. Chris is on with us each Friday, Chris Woodward. But American Family News has written a pretty extensive piece on the declining fertility rate, which I don't think this gets enough attention. Maybe it's because a lot of the media outlets are secular in nature and they don't think biblically. They don't think spiritually. But as I've said countless times, the data here is pretty alarming. It's pretty alarming. For anyone who cares about the next 5, 10, 20 years of our country, which I know the number of people that care about that is probably small, but I do, and you should too. The fertility rate in the U.S. has dropped to an all-time low in 2024, with women having less than 1.6 children. Obviously, you can't have 0.6 of a child. You either have a child or you don't. But this is looking at the rate of children per woman in America. And right now, that number is 1.6. So basically, what it says is that people, on average, are having less than two children. Less than two children. Well, anybody who knows simple math understands that that's not replacement levels, all right? Three are technically over two for an average, for a rate. Over 2.1, over two, is replacement levels, which means that your average couple is having three or more children to be at replacement levels. Well, that's not happening, and it hasn't been happening for some time now. We've been at two or below two since the 70s. And every single time I mention that statistic, people undoubtedly go, there's no way that's true. There's no way. And I say, go look at the data. Go look at the U.S. Census Bureau data going back to the 70s, and what you will find is that we have been at or below 2% since the 70s, and it actually started in the mid-60s, but let's just say the 70s. This is a problem for multiple reasons, and yes, it is indicative of our spiritual state in America, because what it means, if you extrapolate it and apply it to everyday life, what it means is that over time, people have become, specifically married couples, have become more and more disinterested in childbearing, in being fruitful and multiplying. That's the spiritual slash biblical dynamic at play. And we can see that with the cultural decay over the last 50 years, and pair with that, the decline in fertility rate. It goes hand in hand. The further kind of implications of this, beyond just the spiritual nature of it and where people's values lie, is the sheer population number for any society, any culture to sustain itself. You've got to replace yourself. You've got to replace the society with people, with humans, to continue on the society, the country, the culture, etc. And so when people talk about how American civilization is literally at stake with this population decline, which has now become a collapse, that's not an exaggeration, all right? That's not an exaggeration. And there's only one way to counter this and maintain population levels domestically, and that is immigration. So you say, I wonder why the Democrats and the Marxists have been so obsessed with this mass illegal immigration. Well, how do you supplement the rapid population decline in America without going through the laborious, strenuous, lengthy immigration process that we have in America that's honestly overcomplicated, but very generous, over a million legal immigrants a year? How do you bypass that and plug the hole in the boat, if you will, of the rapid population decline domestically? Well, it's called illegal immigration. Biden let in 10 million in 4 years. And what I believe this is an effort, and this is probably one aspect of a much larger plan, but I believe that the Democrats, one of the reasons, and the major, you know, business leaders are in favor of this too. I think one of the major kind of incentives for the mass immigration, although it be illegal, is to backfill this rapid population decline to where we don't really recognize it. Because I'll just tell you this, if we did not have the problem of illegal immigration, then what I'm talking about being below replacement levels since the 70s, this would have been an existential threat that would have been identified by the government and others and would have been talked about for decades leading up to this. Because of the ramifications here, you can't continue growth of a nation without humans. And I think we haven't seen some of the serious side effects of this decline to the extent that they would have already come had it not been for this surge of illegal immigration. I think they've been backfilling illegal immigrants into our country to fill jobs, to kind of stabilize the economy and the system, if you will, to where we look around and we think there's nothing wrong, right? You know, if I want to have one kid or no kids, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, clearly everything's still going great around here. And so when people talk about the great replacement theory, positioned as a grand conspiracy that only Alex Jones believes in, but the great replacement theory is not a theory. This is happening. This has happened, as a matter of fact. This isn't happening. It's both. It's happening now and it has happened in the past. Americans, native-born Americans, are being replaced by foreigners. That's a fact. Look at the sheer numbers. You cannot have population growth when you're having a 1.6% birth rate, unless you're surging in millions of illegal immigrants. And so population replacement, or the great replacement theory, is not a theory anymore. It's in reality. It's here. It's happening. We've allowed tens of millions of foreigners into our country. These are foreign-born people, not American citizens, not born in America, very little concept of American culture and American ideals. And I think this plays in to the downfall of America as we know it. And here's what I want people to understand when we talk about the downfall of America. It doesn't have to be this, like a movie, this movie where, you know, there's civil war in the streets and it's apocalyptic. And, you know, we've seen all the movies, right, about internal conflict, civil war, etc. That's not the downfall of America that we're talking about here. What we're talking about is an America that becomes unrecognizable to the America of maybe 40 years ago or 80 years ago. And if you want to know what this looks like maybe 10 years down the road, go to Europe. Go to Europe. Or go to Minnesota. Go to Minnesota. Go to places where large amounts of foreigners, foreign-born individuals, have been surged in and replaced American culture. And the net effect here is that when you bring in people who have no lineal or lineage and blood connection to the society, to the country, to the culture, it makes it much, much harder to preserve it. And so the reason I think that the Democrats have a vested interest in continuing this great replacement strategy is because the Democrats, the last thing they want from a voting bloc is native-born Americans that have not only a blood connection to the country, but also have some kind of understanding of our Revolutionary War, how we got to where we are today, the Bill of Rights, America's founding fathers, individual liberty, capitalism, God-given rights, all of these ideals and truths that get passed on from generation to generation. The Democrats don't have to deal with that if they simply replace the population with foreigners who have no connection to the ideals I'm talking about.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to this second segment of the show today. You're listening to American Family Radio. The show is At the Core, and we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We've also got the video up on Facebook, At the Core, on X, American Family Radio's page on X, and then over at stream.afa.net. Well, I want to welcome a guest to the program and a friend of the ministry that we've been working with for a long time now, and that's Tammy Fitzgerald, Executive Director of NC Values Coalition, or North Carolina Values Coalition. Tammy's with us now. Hey, Tammy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Walker. It's so nice to be here with you today.
Absolutely. Well, Tammy, we try to highlight what's going on at the state level around the country every so often here on the program, because that's where a lot of the movement, if you will, in the evangelical world and the conservative world takes place is at the state level. And your organization's been leading the charge on pro-family values in North Carolina for a long time now. This session, though, you've been working on what's known as House Bill 805 that the governor has vetoed, that you're trying to get overridden, that has a lot of, it's a big package, big bill, but it has some very important items in it. So tell us about this House Bill 805.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, Walker. And we call this the Big Beautiful Bill, North Carolina style. It started as five different bills, and four of the bills passed the House and one passed the Senate. And when the bills crossed over to the Senate just put everything in one big, beautiful bill. So the base bill is House Bill 805, and it really is an anti-pornography bill. The bill basically requires that anyone appearing on a porn site must have consented and must be above the age of 18. Of course, this would hit at trafficking victims who are often featured on porn sites. So that bill was so popular in the House that all the Democrats voted for it, and probably is why it got loaded up in the Senate with other pro-family issues that we have been behind, primarily defining sex according to biology, like President Trump did in one of his very first executive orders called Defending Women from Gender Ideology Extremism. And so this just defines male, female, and man, woman, and sex according to biology. That seems pretty common sense. Another thing it does is it protects North Carolina girls in private spaces, like sleeping quarters on overnight field trips for K through 12 students. And unfortunately, we have some school systems in North Carolina that allow this. So that's part of the bill. We also have a section in the bill that will prohibit lying about your sex on birth certificates. So if someone decides they want to change the sex on their birth certificate, this bill would require the recorder of deeds to record the old and new birth certificates together so that the truth is reflected in the public records. It also has a section that deals with sex transitioning procedures. This would allow victims of sex transitioning procedures to sue their doctors for up to 10 years. And it would also prohibit sex transition procedures being paid for by state money for prison inmates. And finally, the bill has a section that will deal with obscene books in schools. It allows parents to opt out of curriculum that violates their religious beliefs and also requires the schools to publish all the book titles in their library and allows the parents to notify the librarian that their children cannot check out certain books. So it is a big, beautiful bill, but there are lots of great provisions in this bill, Walker.
Well, what it sounds like, Tammy, is that you guys have gone on all in here. and I love that.
Yeah.
I love that this, you guys are like, hey, if we're going to do it, we're going to go all in and not hold back anything. So this is a powerful piece of legislation in North Carolina. Tell us what the makeup is on the legislative side, meaning the House and the Senate, because you've got the governor vetoing this bill. You guys have lined up an override. What's your breakdown, Republican versus Democrat there?
Well, it's very tight, and we're actually absent the ability to override a veto with just Republicans. We need one House Democrat to vote with Republicans if everyone is present and voting. If there were a couple of Democrats absent, then we would have enough votes. We need 72 votes in the House, and we have 71 Republicans. The Senate has a bare supermajority of 30 members. And so if the House is able to override the veto, then the Senate will take it up, and I'm sure they'll be able to do it.
Gotcha. And that's for folks listening in North Carolina, which we have multiple stations there, what can they do? If they call their lawmaker in North Carolina, what should they say?
They should ask their lawmaker to override the veto of House Bill 805, to vote for women, to vote for children by overriding the veto.
Excellent. Well, there you have it, folks. Tammy, tell our folks your website where they can go read more information about this piece of legislation and all the things that you guys do over at NC Values.
Well, you can go to ncvalues.org, and if you type in /woman, we'll take you to our action page on this particular bill, and you can send an email to your legislator through our site. It's ncvalues.org/woman, and that will enable you to directly communicate with your legislator. But if you just want to see what's on our website, of course, it's ncvalues.org, and we'd love to have people check us out there.
Excellent. The name of the legislation is Prevent Sexual Exploitation of Women and Minors Act, House Bill 805 for those in North Carolina. And as Tammy said, ncvalues.org/woman will take you straight to the page on this specific issue where you can contact your lawmaker in the state. Hey, Tammy, thanks so much for your work and for highlighting what you guys are doing there.
Thank you so much, Walker, and I hope people will call their legislators and demand they pass this legislation into law.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tammy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Absolutely. There you have it, ncvalues.org/woman, and because we do know what a woman is, and Tammy and her team are doing a great job there at North Carolina Values Coalition, ncvalues.org. And Lord willing, over the next few days, that veto will be overridden in the state of North Carolina. That's a big deal, folks. I just want you to understand, overriding a veto, even at the state level, is a very, very big deal. So for Tammy and her team to get this thing over the finish line is a huge victory. And as you mentioned, this is not a fringe bill. This isn't a bill that is bundled in with, 30 other topics and some good, some bad. This is just a heavy hitting piece of legislation, House Bill 805 in the state of North Carolina. Well, another topic I want to get to this segment while we have some time left is the topic of artificial intelligence. I've been talking about this on and off recently, but this is a big topic. The Trump administration is heavily focused on artificial intelligence. And there's two challenges that I see us facing, our country facing, related to artificial intelligence over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years. The first challenge is the aging of our electrical grid. Everybody you talk to that is in the AI world, and if you listen to their testimonies with Congress and elsewhere, and there's a major power need, electricity need in the U.S. in order for the U.S. to become dominant in artificial intelligence. The reason that's a problem is because we've been told for the last 30 years that fossil fuels are bad and that we don't need to continue producing, quote, dirty energy. And instead, we've gone to these less efficient means of power, which are solar and wind. And so here we are with very old and dilapidated infrastructure when it relates to our power grid. And what is the one thing that AI must have to function? Power. And so, Bobby, I want to get your thoughts on this, because you look at the electric grid as we know it today, it's a very old system. It's a very kind of antiquated system. It works great, brilliant invention, but the rudimentary nature of our electric grid, meaning power poles, transmission lines, transformers, I mean, it's a pretty basic setup. Where are we going to get all this power from? Because when you look at the amount of power that's needed just for one data center, you're talking about enough power to run like a whole city of 100,000 people just for one data center. We don't have power just sitting around that we can pull out of thin air.
Yeah, and like we've discussed on other shows here recently, I think the small, compact mini reactors, if you will.
Yes.
Pardon me. I think that's going to be our go-to. My understanding is that they're fairly easy to build, get them online fairly quickly, things of that nature.
Yes.
And it won't be just along the lines of data mining and things of that nature, which require huge amounts of energy. I think you'll see them more populated in communities and things of that nature where they are safe. The technology on nuclear energy is nothing like it used to be in Three Mile Island that most people of my age anyway still remember.
Yeah.
There's relief. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it'll be here fairly quickly.
Yeah. To your point, I do agree that is the solution, because when you listen to people who are experts on small modular reactors, it's a no-brainer when you look at what it can power, how small of a footprint it has, and how self-sufficient it is, meaning that and you can basically further segregate the grid and shield against mass outages.
Exactly. Right?
But that's going to take the government. The government is going to have to streamline the approval process here, because Biden was holding that up.
Yes. And I don't foresee that being an obstacle, because, again, Trump is very Bitcoin-oriented.
Yes.
He knows what it requires in terms of energy, so he'll be really flexible in that regard, I believe. The other point I think is important, as they're building these mini reactors around the country and so forth, that will also buy time for the grid to be updated in a major way, not just Band-Aids and you know, rubber bands kind of fixes that they've been using over the last number of years.
So. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to have to invest in the grid. And this is coming on the heels of $37 trillion in debt. And this is a problem with the debt. I mean, when you have the debt levels we do, it doesn't leave a lot of room for investment in infrastructure. Because the investment in infrastructure, the return on investment comes down the road, pretty far down the road. Now, with AI, it's going to come pretty rapidly, the return on investment, just because this is going to be a multi-trillion-dollar industry around the world. So America has to be the leader on this. There's no question about it. I know there's a lot of questions still up in the air on the whole moral aspect of this artificial intelligence topic. But if America's not in the driver's seat, folks, who is? Who's going to be in the driver's seat? I don't want communist China in the driver's seat. I don't want Russia in the driver's seat. I don't want India in the driver's seat. America is the best shot at producing AI and doing so humanely, morally, and with some type of ethical boundaries. And so this is why America's got to be out front on this. So I agree. I think the small modular reactors, it's a fascinating technology. I think that's the way to go, but it's going to have to be developed very, very quickly, because right now the current data centers are just munching off of the traditional grid, whether it's coal, natural gas, et cetera. And you can't do that for an extended amount of time without basically eating up all of your capacity on the grid. The other thing that I think is going to be a challenge is the moral element here. I know we need to be careful adding in more government regulations and bureaucracy and stuff when you're talking about a booming industry like AI, because there's nothing that's going to slow this down until you add government regulations, and then that will slow this renaissance down drastically, which isn't good. But this is kind of the wild, wild west of the technological revolution. And as I've said before, artificial intelligence, folks, I would just encourage you to read up on it. You need to read up, listen up, watch, you know, experts in this space. This is pretty intimidating. This is pretty intimidating. The level of knowledge that these supercomputers can obtain through they're basically bundling together human knowledge, mass amounts of human produced knowledge into one database, if you will. And then it can score, like, for example, on an ACT test, it can score 36. It can score 36 nearly every time. I'm talking about the AI computer. And you look at, you know, the hypotheticals of an AI machine getting kind of on the loose, right, outside of human control, or even AI being able to hide things from humans, which they're talking about. They're talking about cases of this now, of where they're querying AI. They know it's there, but AI is intentionally hiding it from humans. That's some pretty intimidating stuff, sci-fi level stuff that Christians need to be studied up on. We'll be back.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you on this last segment of today's program. And we've had Tammy Fitzgerald with us in the last segment from North Carolina Values, talking about her work in the state legislature on some great legislation, House Bill 805. There. And I want to bring back a guest on the program that we've had before, Representative Laurie Schlegel out of Louisiana. And Laurie's been part of critical legislation, pro-family legislation in the legislature there in Louisiana for several years now. And she's with us now. Representative Schlegel, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Walker.
Well, we covered, and here on AFR, we covered the not only the Fifth Circuit ruling on the topic of age verification for pornographic websites. That was a while back. But the Supreme Court recently, at the end of their June term, ruled on a Texas law that dealt with a very similar topic, almost exact topic, and that is age verification for visitors of these pornographic websites. And over nearly 20 states have passed this type of legislation. But the reason we have you on is because Louisiana was one of the first to lead on this issue, and the Supreme Court upheld the Texas standard, which is a mirror image of what you guys did in Louisiana. Tell us, give us a little background, or take us back to the passing of this legislation, and then here we are now with it being upheld at the Supreme Court.
Sure. So I got elected in a special election in 2021. I'm a counselor. I'm also a certified sex addiction therapist. So it's obviously what I do professionally, but I didn't have any plans to go out right out of the gate and pass something like this. But I came across a Billie Eilish interview with Howard Stern, and she was just sharing as a young lady, she started watching porn at age 11 and it just destroyed her relationship and her brain. And I just said, well, I need to look at this. And so it just so happened to be at the time we were coming out of COVID. Our court system was using our digitalized ID to verify people's identity when they were coming to do virtual court. And so I got with LA Wallet and I asked them, hey, is it technologically available that we could protect someone's privacy, give someone's course age? And, you know, obviously my biggest thing was I wanted to make sure the technology was available that I could protect people's privacy if I was going to do this. And it was resounding yes. So then I knew I needed to pass a law that was going to pass constitutional muster, considering some of the past Supreme Court precedent. So I just so happened to have a friend who's a First Amendment lawyer. And we looked at the Supreme Court precedent. We drafted the law, which I felt was going to pass constitutional muster. We educated our body on what our kids are actually seeing very easily online in two clicks, and how harmful it is. And we passed it almost unanimously. One person did vote no. They said it wasn't going to be constitutional, which I argued that I think it had a path. And Free Speech Coalition versus Paxton proved that we were right, that age verification could pass constitutional muster and we could protect kids online.
Laurie, this once again, we're talking to Representative Laurie Slagle out of Louisiana. She represents House District 82 and was critical proponent behind this original bill in Louisiana that's now been upheld at the Supreme Court by virtue of the Texas bill that was signed into law. This did you ever see this coming? Meaning, like when you were going through the process you just talked about and calling people and lawyers and saying, hey, can we do this constitutionally, et cetera? Did you ever think that the topic would be at the Supreme Court just handful of years later?
I will say I was hoping it was going to be at the Supreme Court. I knew we were going to get sued because that's what the porn industry and big tech really do when it comes to child protective bills, is that they don't want to be regulated. And so I knew we were going to be sued. So I knew we would have to pass a law that would pass constitutional muster. Now, I didn't know it was going to be this soon in terms of getting to the Supreme Court. And I think that's a testament to, so we passed our law and then Mississippi, Utah passed it very shortly after, and then Texas. And then the porn industry came and sued all of our states. Texas's case made it to the Supreme Court first. But how quickly, so I passed this in 2022. It was enacted because I gave them 6 months time by the time I passed it to when it was enacted for them to be able to put age verification into place. And so it was January 1st, 2023 that Pornhub complied in our state. And that's when it took off. The nation really became aware of our law. And then it was only in a very short period of time where over 20 states passed it. And what I like to say is, look, unfortunately, in this very partisan world that we live in, to have so many. So at the time, our governor was a Democrat governor. We did have a Republican-controlled legislature, but he had no qualms in vetoing. He vetoed the Fairness in Women's Sports bill. So this is a very bipartisan effort. Everybody, when you recognize what's online and what our kids are seeing very easily and how very early in age they're seeing this, you can't help but want to do something. And so I think it was a testament to how pervasive the problem is and how we pretty much unified around it. And I'm thankful the Supreme Court also saw it that way.
When you're working on legislation like this, I've heard... obviously, this so-called Free Speech Coalition that challenged a Texas law, that's made up of a lot of special technology interest representing multi-billion dollar corporations. But in Louisiana, in your experience, does the technology lobby, and that's a broad term, I'm talking the Metas, the Googles, these various multi-billion dollar technology companies that host these social platforms, Do they lobby against these type bills? Because I've heard reports that they have in Louisiana, but I'm not on the ground there. So what's your experience been?
Yeah, so I've passed a few since the age verification, and yes, big tech always, and they do it under the umbrella of their associations. So it's not always one particular company coming to say that we oppose this legislation, but they do it. So when I first passed the age verification, the one big organization that did oppose it was TechNet, which is a conglomerate of some, an association of some of the big tech companies. And then I've passed a few others since then. And the same associations have come, so even some of the executives from some of the big tech companies have come to try to oppose or at least amend and try to neuter the bills. They totally do not want to take, they don't want the responsibility or they don't want the accountability that comes with actually having children on their platforms.
Hmm. Yeah, that's, I'm not going to say that's shocking, but it's disturbing. Because, you know, I've presented before Apple's board of directors at their annual shareholder meeting, talking about this very problem. And if shareholders and consumers knew what links these companies like Apple, like Meta go to avoid accountability in this space, it's very, very disturbing. And one example I pointed out when talking to Apple lawyers on a call leading up to the shareholder meeting, because they didn't want me to present, so they were trying to talk me out of it. And I showed them how on an Apple device, a minor, under 13, which legal minor is under 18, but for Apple's purposes, they have different standards for 0 to 13 and then 14 to 18. But under 13, you can send pornographic images back and forth with a user using the iMessage feature, and Apple doesn't offer a way to block that. And so I was petitioning for basic measures to put in place for all minors, not just a certain age minor, and they wouldn't go for it. And so it's very shocking to me, Representative, that they want to put up, you know, roadblocks to sensible legislation and sensible moves that undoubtedly will protect minors.
That's been the biggest frustrating part about this all, because actually our body as the legislature and obviously the governors have signing these bills, they're all very united into passing this. But yes, big tech come with their lobbyists and what they try to do is amend it to sort of neuter it, to make it really not anything. And thankfully, we've been able to, I think a lot of the states have been able to push back and pass some really good things that push the needle. We did just pass our duty of care bill this last session. And yes, they all came to try to amend it. But when you're contracting with a minor and you're hosting someone, like you said, as young as 13, and whether it's a video game or social media, and you're allowing adults just access to them via a chat or messaging to contacting them, we're seeing a lot of grooming behavior. And then it translates to sexual assault of these minors outside in the physical world. So it's something that I think they have to. I won't stop. So, but yeah, it's been very discouraging.
Once again, we've been talking to Representative Lori Slagle out of Louisiana, representing District 82. She's been a critical proponent and sometimes author behind some of this critical legislation to protect minors from harmful pornographic material. Representative, you mentioned your background in counseling. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, just recap for us the damage that pornography does, not just if there's victims involved, but just to someone's mind and the way their mind thinks about human sexuality. Just talk about some of the damage that takes place when people become addicted to pornography.
Sure. And that's why I think we were so successful the first time, because what I did is I did a webinar with the Women's Caucus, and we invited our male and our female senators and representatives to come hear from Gail Dines. She's a sociologist. She's done a lot of research when it comes to pornography, and just hands down, peer reviewed research conclusively shows that it's harmful to minors. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a boy, where it produces more aggressive behavior, or for a female, which becomes because unfortunately, research shows 90% of the mainstream pornography out there is shows some sort of aggression to women. So that's what these young minds are sort of being trained for their sexuality is to see, because it's not healthy sexuality that they're seeing. Right. And now they're seeing it younger and younger. So they say that the average age is around 10 to 12 years old, that they're seeing hardcore pornography online. And you can't go walk into a strip club on Bourbon Street as a 12-year-old and be able to get in. And right. So it's reasonable common measures that we're putting into place, whether it comes to on these now social media platforms, to the pornography websites, which now the Supreme Court says it's constitutional to have age verification. And so we're really starting to see, children are really being affected by pornography.
Hey, Representative, thanks so much for coming on the program. Representative Laurie Schlegel, appreciate your work there. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, I would describe what we're talking about here as really the second frontier on the battle against pornography, with the first frontier being the 70s and 80s, where my grandfather, Don Wildman, fought day in and day out to get the pornography magazines, beginning with Playboy and Penthouse, pulled from the convenience store shelves. Yes, there was a move to place pornographic magazines at eye level of children in convenience stores like 7-Eleven. That was the first frontier in the battle against big pornography. And I think with the era of the internet and social media, we are currently in the second frontier in our battle against online pornography. And we're winning. The reality is, and this is an encouragement, we're not done yet, but we're winning. We've got age verification legislation on the books in over 20 states. Top providers of pornography, including Pornhub, have completely shuttered their services and blocked IP addresses originating from dozens of states, over a dozen states, Mississippi, Florida, Texas, etc. And so we've got to keep this going. There's no reason we can't get this through in 50 states. Absolutely no reason we can't get this through in 50 states. And then we move on to the limiting pornography for adults. The children are the first step, protecting the children, protecting the little ones, protecting their hearts and their minds and their innocence. But let's be clear. Pornography is damaging for everyone. It's creating victims on one side and victims on the other side. And so there's no use case morally in which pornography is acceptable. But the first thing you have to do with any battle is you have to figure out where to start. And where we started in this era of the internet and the wild, wild west that it has created, the first place you start is protecting the children. Because not just morally is that the right path to go down as when it comes to prioritizing things, but legally as well, it's a much easier path to trek legally as well. So that's why we're going after protecting children. And then once children are properly protected, we move on to protecting adults. And to anybody who says the government shouldn't legislate morality, where have you been since the dawn of creation? All that government does is legislate what they view as right or wrong. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.